Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on Ritalin when we come back. Hey, if you're earning $50,000 a year and you pay all of your 14 taxes, then you get to keep about 40% of what you create and produce. Government gets 60%. That's about $20,000 for you and $30,000 for the government. Now, isn't that just kind of special? But if you think your share isn't enough for you, then why don't you work twice as hard and produce twice as much and make $100,000 next year? Then go ahead and pay your same 14 taxes just like you did this year. And you're going to net about 25% and the government will net about 75%. For working twice as hard and producing twice as much, you're going to net $4,000 more. That's about 8% more net take-home pay than you did this year. You produce twice as much, you produce 100% more, but you get 8% of it. And by the way, that's guaranteed by Congress and the IRS. That's why I contend that there ought to be something more intelligent for you and I to do than to work to put ourselves into the top 5% of income earners and then only net 25% of it, don't you? Why don't you call today and order my free 4-hour CD package and let me tell you how to deal with that kind of crime. It's 4 hours of entertaining information. It answers many of your legal questions about taxes and why it is that we pay so much and receive so little in return. And let me teach you how to do just that in my Tax and Status School, which is now available on compact disc for adult home education. To order your free general law CD package, just call direct, 417-273-4967. If you didn't get that, let me go a little slower. It's area code 417-273-4967, or you can go to the website, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email when you get there, georgegordon.org. Click onto the email machine and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Again, georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. Hey, we're talking about Ritalin. Ritalin, cocaine. Ritalin is just the package name for a product that you buy down on the street corner, you know, when you're going to a party. We call it cocaine. Cokeheads. It's an addictive drug, and we're giving it to about 5 million American children. About 10% of the school-age children here in the United States are on Ritalin, or its equivalent. Other drug manufacturers have different names for it, but it all comes from the same place. Cocaine. It's an addictive drug, and we're giving it to our children, and we're turning about 10% of our school-age children here in America into cokeheads. These children, when they grow up, will already have an addiction to cocaine. I mentioned to you last time that great nations, city-states, and empires are not built with drug addicts. In fact, that's one of the causes for the disintegration of this empire called the United States of America. We're on the slippery slope, children. It's just a matter of time until this nation goes the way of ancient Rome and Babylon, Greece, and Egypt. But while we're talking about this thing of cocaine, remember that if you read the nonsensical list of symptoms, just read the list, you're going to find that just about any child alive on planet Earth would be described as suffering from ADHD from these symptoms, such as a chronic history of short attention span, distractibility, emotional lability, impulsivity, moderate to severe hyperactivity, minor neurological signs, and abnormal EEG. Learning may or may not be impaired. So when you read that list of symptoms, that could fit any kid anywhere in the world. What child isn't impulsive occasionally? What child doesn't cry and laugh? That's what emotional ability means. What child cannot be distracted? Now, one big worry that I have is that Ritalin could be recommended for any child who seemed bored or restless or who exhibited unusual signs of intelligence or skill. So if your kid is intelligent or is skillful, just read the biographies of some of the great men of the past, the geniuses, the Albert Einsteins, and the Henry Fords. Geniuses. You know, you ought to wonder what we're doing to our current generation. The most talented individuals in our society, of our children, are those that are being diagnosed with ADHD. The kids that get out of their seats and act like that they're alive. So we drug them until they're just sitting there like they're in a drug-induced stupor so that the teacher doesn't have to be distracted. One big worry that I have that Ritalin could be recommended for any child that seemed bored or restless. My God, when you take a look at the history books and the autobiographies, every genius, a Napoleon, an Adolf Hitler, a Bill Clinton, for crying out loud, are going to they're going to act like they're alive and that they're doing something, and they're going to be diagnosed as being ADHD and drugged into a stupor, and then we wonder why America, the great empire, is being destroyed. And it isn't the terrorists destroying us from without. We are destroying ourselves from within. So now, is Ritalin a drug in search of a disease? Well, that's what one author wrote, and it isn't difficult to see why. Ritalin was first used back in the 1960s. And Ritalin has been recommended as a treatment for functional behavioral problems since the 1960s. When the CIBA first suggested this in 1961, they were turned down by the FDA. But in 1963, approval was given for this use of the drug. By 1966, the experts had come up with a definition of the sort of child for whom Ritalin could be useful and who to whom it could be prescribed. Children suffering from minimal brain dysfunction, the first symptom for which Ritalin was recommended, were defined as children of near average, average, or above average general intelligence with certain learning or behavioral disabilities, ranging from mild to severe, which are associated with deviations of function of the central nervous system. These deviations may manifest themselves by various combinations of impairment in perception, conceptualization, language, memory, and control of attention, impulse, or motor function. Other symptoms which children might exhibit and which could be ascribed to this MBD, minimal brain dysfunction, included being sweet and even-tempered, being cooperative and friendly, being gullible and easily led, being a light sleeper, or being a heavy sleeper. Come on, kids. If your kid is a light sleeper, then he's got a minimal brain dysfunction. If he's a heavy sleeper, he's got a minimal brain dysfunction. And these are doctors now, we know, with degrees after their names. But they've got a drug and they need to sell it. So who are we going to sell it to? Now, it could well be that there's a child that was injured in an auto accident of some kind that might have this minimal brain dysfunction. But, you know, that's the exception. And what we do here in America is we take this exception and then we go out and we market it until it becomes the norm. You know, let's just take house insurance or fire insurance. Everybody's got fire insurance on their house. Do you really need it? Well, the insurance industry, they show you a picture of a house burning with a little girl in the second or third floor and the fire engine with the hook and ladder and a fireman going up to save the little girl. And then they tell us, you know, this could be your home. This could be your house. And pretty soon, when we see that over and over and over, pretty soon we say, well, your house burning down is normal. That's the usual ordinary. See, it isn't true, but you believe that it's true. That's why you buy fire insurance. If you didn't believe that your house could burn down, why would you buy fire insurance? So you must believe that your house could burn down. But it can't. I looked into this up in Boise, Idaho some years back. I wanted to know, when was the last time a house burned to the ground in Boise, Idaho? And the answer, 1957. 1957. That was the last year, the last time that a house in Boise, Idaho burned to the ground. Houses don't burn to the ground. Well, out here in the countryside they do. When we have a fire out here in Ozark County, if my house catches on fire, it's going to burn to the ground. It'll probably be burned to the ground before the fire department can even get here. But not in the city. So while it's routine to have a house burn to the ground here, it's not in the city, and that's where most of you people live. 97% of you live in the city. And so you have accepted the norm. The norm is houses burn to the ground, but it's not true. Let's take teenage pregnancy. Back in 1960, they came to us and they said, my God, we got this terrible problem with teenage pregnancy and we need sex education in school. In 1960, there were so few girls pregnant before graduation, they didn't even have a percentage for it. But we do today. In the year 2006, it's 10%. Now, since about half the girls that are in, about half the students in school are girls, I don't know if that's 10% of the girls or 10% of the student body. If it's 10% of the student body, it's 20% of girls, 1 in 5. If it's 10% of the girls, it's 1 out of 10 is pregnant. You see, they tell us that in 1960, we had this terrible problem, and we got to solve it. So we need to give sex education a chance in the public schools. So we did. We started teaching sodomy in the public schools. It's called alternative lifestyle. And we started teaching sex education in the public schools. And today, 25% of the students have a sexually transmitted disease. STDs, they call that. 25%. We didn't have any venereal disease or sexually transmitted diseases in 1957 when I was in high school. None. I wouldn't have been afraid to kiss any girl in the 1957 class. Last time I went to a class reunion, I was using Purell about every time I shook hands with one of those girls. I mean, I'm not exactly paranoid, but I'm pretty cautious now in my old age. You know, when you get to be old, you don't have as many years to live, and so you need to protect every year that you got left. And the last thing I need is some sexually transmitted disease, that comes from somebody. So a house burns down, you need fire insurance. Teenage pregnancy, you need sex education. The exception becomes the norm. You got a kid that acts up, so we got to give them all Ritalin. And so we're teaching all of our children sex education in public school. And now we find that teenage pregnancy went from, we don't know what the percentage is in 1960, to 10% today. And the house burns down. Well, everybody has fire insurance today, but today fewer houses burn down than ever in the past. And so now they're telling us that every kid's going to need this Ritalin. Well, if you listen to the pharmaceutical companies and social lady and the school teachers. Now, other symptoms which children might exhibit and which could be ascribed to this MBD included being sweet and even-tempered. Well, my God, if a kid was sweet and even-tempered, why would you want to give that kid Ritalin? Being cooperative and friendly. Why would you want to give a kid that's cooperative and friendly Ritalin? Being gullible and easily led. Excuse me, children aren't exactly the wisest streetwise mafia dons, from New York's crime families, are they? I mean, come on. being gullible and easily led, being a light sleeper or a heavy sleeper. I mean, you know, that's an oxymoron of him by itself, isn't it? Your kid's a light sleeper, he needs Ritalin. He's a heavy sleeper, he needs Ritalin. Is there ever a case when a kid doesn't need Ritalin? No. No, when you read these symptoms, there isn't anybody that doesn't have one of these characteristics. What in the hell does that have to do with the price of putty? Well, it sells drugs. It becomes the norm. That's what we're after. We're trying to convince you that your kid has got one of these symptoms over here and that he needs this Ritalin. It doesn't strike me that the people that are easily led are the little kids. It strikes me that the people who are gullible and are easily led are the adults that are buying cocaine for 10-year-old kids. That's what sounds like to me. It's gullible, easily led. Given that sort of list to work with, it is difficult to think of a child who wouldn't benefit from Ritalin, though the official estimate seemed to be that only about 1 in 20 children were real MBD sufferers. About 1 in 20 would be about 5%. Now that's a bunch. So evidently there's more than that. It's 10%. Must be 2 out of 20, 1 out of 10. A convenient diagnosis. The bottom line is that it has become easy for social workers and teachers to define any child who misbehaves or doesn't learn properly, whatever properly is, as being a child that is suffering from MBD or ADHD. It's a convenient diagnosis which excuses parents, it excuses teachers, and it excuses social workers from responsibility or any sense of guilt in the poor behavior or the poor performance of these children. It's not the teacher that can't teach. It isn't the parent that cannot train up a child in the way he should go. And it isn't the social worker over here who is now acting as a doctor prescribing a drug. Not just a drug, cocaine, for little children. How can the parents or the teacher be accused of failing when the child is sick? Your child is sick! No. What it is your child is misbehaving because he hasn't been taught or trained how he ought to behave. He hasn't got a clue. Hell, when he was born, he didn't know anything. And he was born to parents that didn't know much more and were unable to impart what little knowledge they had to the child. Especially when it comes to conduct. The head of the task force, which identified and labeled this MBD in the first place, allegedly, subsequently joined the company making Ritalin and produced their handbook for doctors on the condition. Did you get that? Let me read that one to you again. The head of the task force, which identified and labeled this MDB. So you get this committee out here. And so we appoint a committee. Look into this ADHD, would you? So the committee looks into it. And then they subsequently join the company that's making the Ritalin and then produce their handbook for doctors on the condition. Commercially, Ritalin and MBD became a huge success. Well, how could it miss? You appoint a committee, the committee comes back and says, my God, these kids all are sick, they gotta have this Ritalin. Well, they're all making money off of it, why shouldn't they recommend it? So by 1975, around 1 million children in the U.S. were diagnosed as suffering from MBD. Half of these were being given drugs, and half of those on drugs were on Ritalin. For the sake of completeness, I should point out that Ritalin has not always been used exclusively in the treatment of badly behaved children. When Dr. Andrew Mallison wrote his book, Need Your Doctor Be So Useless, in 1973, he reported that the CIBA pharmaceutical company had suggested to doctors the use of their habit-forming drug Ritalin, for environmental depression only, by noise, a new social problem. So the drug company, when they invented this drug, they didn't have a clue as to what they were going to do to sell it. So they came up with something. And they said, well, it's an environmental noise a problem here in our society, and so you should prescribe it for that. When people come into you and they say, oh, God, I can't sleep at night. I've got this, and the streetcars are banging and clanging, and horns are honking, and there's noise all night. Yeah, what do you expect in New York? So prescribe this Ritalin. Prescribe cocaine. You know, it's too bad that we don't actually use plain names so that we all know what we're all talking about. Each drug company has their own generic label. They've got their own name for their own product, of course. Does Ritalin work? I mean, that's really the bottom line. The next question which should be asked is, does Ritalin work? Well, I'm afraid that I can't answer that question, and I honestly don't think anyone else can either. Novartis, the drug company, which is now responsible for Ritalin in the United Kingdom. Now, get this. Novartis, they sell it over in England. And then this CIBT company over here in the United States is the drug company that sells it over here. Well, Novartis admits that data on efficacy of long-term use of Ritalin are not complete. Now, we've been using this drug for 40 years. Started back in the 1960s. Got cranking on kids by 1975. Here it is, 2006. 45 years of Ritalin use, and we don't know whether it works or not. Haven't got a clue. We don't know if it cures your kid from this ADHD, doesn't cure your kid, makes your kid worse, or doesn't do any of the above. We don't know. With 1 in 20 children said to be suffering from MBD or ADHD by 1975, or whatever else you want to call it, this Ritalin, having been on the market and used for this condition for 30 years, and with some experts saying that 1 million children a year are being given Ritalin in the U.S. alone, you might find this a trifle disappointing. Now, this is back in 1975. Given 1 million kids a year, 1975. Well, wouldn't you think that after 30 years of use, somebody would say, well, it works or it doesn't? The drug company said, we don't. We haven't got a clue. Well, just how long does it take to find out whether or not a drug works? Now, am I being horribly cynical in suggesting that it might be against the drug company's interest to find out whether or not Ritalin really works? I mean, after all, if long-term studies found that Ritalin didn't work, then a very profitable drug would presumably lose its appeal. Some research has been done. 1 5-year study of hyperactive children who were given Ritalin at Montreal Children's Hospital found that the children did not differ in the long term from hyperactive children who were not given the drug. So over the long haul, at this one hospital, Montreal Children's Hospital, they monitored these children for several years and found there wasn't any difference between the kids that are taking Ritalin and the ones that aren't. Except that it makes a lot of money for the drug companies and turns the children that are on Ritalin into cokeheads. At least one investigator has reported that drugs like Ritalin may produce a deterioration in learning new skills at school. Wait a minute. Hang on a second. The purpose for giving this Ritalin is because that these children are so hyperactive they can't learn in school, so we need to calm them down. Now we find out, at least in this one study, where they actually tested some children that were on Ritalin, their learning and cognitive abilities were actually diminished as compared to children who were not on Ritalin. Now, remember, boys and girls, the reason for giving your kid this Ritalin is so he can learn more and get smarter, so he can go to college like you did and get a degree after his name, right? I mean, isn't that the purpose? So one investigator has reported that drugs like Ritalin may produce a deterioration in learning new skills at school, and parents have reported that the symptoms of MBD have miraculously disappeared during school holidays. Well, let's see. Now, your kid's going to school and he's got ADHD. He's jumping up and down and roaming around the schoolroom and he can't learn. He's got all these symptoms over here. But in summer vacation, just miraculously, the ADHD disappears and the kid's out swimming and fishing and out riding his bike and having a good time. Now, doesn't that tell you people anything? I mean, don't we have any street sense left? Are our senses of observation so dulled or dead that we can't even believe what we see with our own lying eyes? Kind of reminds me of Groucho Marx. He said, one time he said, "Are you going to believe me or your lying eyes? Are you going to believe the doctor, social lady, and the school teacher, or your lying eyes?" Now, the picture is confused by the fact that there may be a short-term improvement in behavior among children given Ritalin. But is this really improvement? Is this really a cure? Or is the child simply drugged? Amphetamine-type drugs reduce the variety of behavior exhibited by children. A child taking Ritalin may have more focused behavior, but although that might mean less disruption in the classroom, does it really help the child? And should we give a child a powerful and potentially hazardous drug because it keeps him quiet? And who are we keeping him quiet for? Is it for the benefit of the child or the benefit of the teacher? There is evidence suggesting that children who are genuinely hyperactive may have been poisoned by food additives or by lead breathed in from air polluted by petrol fumes. If this is so, then is giving another potentially toxic drug really the answer to this problem of environmental pollution? Well, has anybody ever thought about that? Now, Joel Wallach, in his book on rare earths, said, what these children are missing is minerals. They are nutritionally deficient. That's what their problem is. The children are being starved to death. They don't have the right balance of minerals, and their bodies don't perform like they would if they had good nutrition. Then on top of that, we feed these kids sugar. The average kid is drinking one or two cans of pop a day. This soda pop is laced with 9 teaspoons of sugar. This white sugar is a simple carbohydrate. When God developed sugar in the form of honey or fruit juice out of the fruit, those are called complex carbohydrates. Simple carbohydrates cause this kind of erratic behavior. That's been observed. That's been documented. Now watch what you're doing here, ladies. You go to the grocery store and you pick up a case of Coke. You bring it home and you dole the Coke out to your kid. Your child can only digest 3 teaspoons of simple carbohydrate sugar a day. In 24 hours, his little body can digest 3 teaspoonfuls, and you're giving him 9 to 18 every day. And then you wonder why your kid is hyperactive. So you wire this kid with this stimulant drug called sugar, and then you give him Ritalin to calm him down. Now, isn't that drug abuse? Just what in the hell is drug abuse anyway? I mean, we criticize people, you know, that are on uppers and downers. And we make fun of them. And we say, listen to these crazy fools. They're out here buying uppers and then they're buying downers. And, you know, Americans, it seems, are drug addicts and don't seem to understand that. And I don't think that you're ever going to get through to a drug addict and make him comprehend or understand that he's got a problem. People that are sober can look at a drunk and see that the drunk is drunk, but does the drunk see that he's drunk, or does he see all you sober people as being some kind of an aberration or something wrong with you people out there? So a nation of drug addicts are not very likely to solve the drug problem. And by the way, I mentioned this the other day, let me mention it again. You know that group over there called the Taliban? That was those nasty people in Afghanistan that were running that government over there before 9/11? These real wicked, evil Muslim guys, you know, that were just crazies. And I don't deny that. I mean, you know, they got their own religious ideology over there. They got this crazy Muslim religion. But they were opposed to the heroin trade. Now, this heroin comes from a poppy. And they grow these poppies in Afghanistan, and Afghanistan is one of the few regions of the world which really has a great climate for growing these poppies. And so Afghanistan has been the largest supplier of heroin historically for the last 100, maybe even longer, but at least the last 100 years. All right. The Taliban comes to power after the Russians have been defeated in Afghanistan. Remember that during the 80s? This Osama bin Laden guy, he goes out here and he's fighting for the freedom of Afghanistan. They drove the Russians out. Okay, the Taliban takes over and they eradicate heroin production. The Americans came in 2002. Remember that? And from 2002 to 2006, heroin production has been reinstituted in Afghanistan, and this year, 2006, just 3 years after the Americans took control of Afghanistan, Afghanistan is the world's leading producer of heroin. Kids, do you think that's an accident? Well, think about that for a minute. The Taliban is in a backward third world country called Afghanistan. They've got enough money over there to buy Jack Diddley squat. I mean, their people are just as poor as church mice. And then the biggest industry they got over there is heroin, and the Taliban comes in there and stamps it out. No foreign aid, no war on drugs, no helicopters to run around and find, you know, like here in our county, you know, like right now, they got helicopters flying over looking for the marijuana planted out here in the Mark Twain National Forest. I mean, these guys, they don't have helicopters, they don't have drug czars or Jack Diddley squat, but they eradicated heroin production. The Americans come over there, and in 36 months, Afghanistan is the world leader again with the biggest crop in 2006. They're producing the biggest crop in the history of Afghanistan under American occupation. What's that tell you? I mean, do you have to have a degree after your name to figure out that America is the world's number one drug-producing nation and that it's a part and parcel of our foreign policy? I mean, we got troops down in Colombia doing war games, training the Colombian army to do away with the cocaine traffickers. I'll tell you, kids, if you want to do away with cocaine trafficking, you go over to Afghanistan and you hire 100 of them Taliban guys and send them down to Colombia. They've got a proven track record. They know how to eliminate drug dealing. They did it in their country. No, we don't want to abolish drug dealing. We don't want to abolish cocaine. Our government is not in the business of putting an end to drugs. Drugs are the biggest industry in America. The medical industry, kids, is $1.6 trillion. It's bigger than automobiles. It's bigger than airlines. It's bigger than aircraft and shipping. And it's bigger than all of them combined. Hell, we're not here to do away with drugs. But, you know, you can't just go out here and tell people, let's legalize cocaine. Because, see, cocaine used to be legal in this country. In 1850, there wasn't any law that said you can't snort coke. In 1900, there wasn't any law that said you can't light up a marijuana pipe or cigarette. We didn't have any laws against heroin. And we didn't have any drug problem. What you got to do in order to make something valuable is to outlaw it. You saw what happened with Prohibition. See, in 1920, we introduced Prohibition. We outlawed the sale of alcohol. My God, it introduced Prohibition. Why, there was more alcohol being sold in those 13 years from 1920 to 1933 during Prohibition than we ever sold before. Now, of course, we topped that now because we got more people. But up until 1934, when they repealed Prohibition, in that 13 years of Prohibition from 20 to 33, sold more booze in those 13 years than we ever did 1919, 1918, 1900, 1890, or 1870. And it sold for a higher price. So when they legalized it in 1934, now the government comes in, legalizes it, and the price goes down. Alcohol is dirt cheap. Alcohol is just dirt cheap. That's why cocaine and marijuana and heroin are so high priced. It's because they're illegal. You know, the powers that be aren't stupid. And even though it's illegal, you get this, the drugstore, when they sell cocaine or heroin or marijuana, which they have their trade names, you know, you can go in and buy marijuana from Rexall. You can buy cocaine from Rexall or Osco Butry. You can buy heroin. And they've got their trade names. It costs six times more for heroin in the drugstore than it does on the street corner. Illegal drugs, as expensive as they are six times cheaper on the street corner than they are over the counter. What the war on drugs is all about is a war on competition. Pfizer and Merck and the drug cartel, they don't want competition, but they want the drug illegal, and they want it so you have to have a prescription so that they can charge you six times more. That's what that game is all about. And that's why I asked the question, honest to God, do you think that selling Ritalin, cocaine, to you to give to your child is in your best interest or in your child's best interest, or is that in the best interest of the doctors and the teachers and the social workers and the drug manufacturers? Think about that. And while you're thinking about that, let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. And if you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It's open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. Remember, the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and it can be accessed through the webpage. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. And remember, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. And we do it 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School and asking for it. That's all it takes. Call us up. The number's 417-273-4967. Cost you 2 bits and a box stop. The number again, 417-273-4967. And just ask for a CD package. Just that simple. You know, calling the phone. Sometimes people stutter. They're kind of funny. They call, hey, you're advertising something on the radio and whatever that was, I'd like to order. Okay, it's called our free CD package. Just call us on the phone. Say, hey, you know that freebie that you're giving away? Send me one, would you? That's all it takes. Now, if you don't want to do that over the telephone, then just go to the webpage, and you'll find georgegordon.org. Click on to the email. Just send an email request. But be sure that you put your snail mail address on there so that we have a place to send it, because we don't send these out over the Internet. So we got to have a name and address. And if you do that, well, we'll whip one on you. Be patient, though. Sometimes people call you and say, well, I ordered that last week and I didn't get it yet. Well, we're old folks here, you know. We're old people and we're not in a big hurry. So, you know, give us a little time. You know, sometimes they tell you, give us 6 weeks. I think we can have it out to you in 6 weeks, but, you know, give us a couple of weeks. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertiser, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, Just go to our webpage, georgegordon.org, or call us direct, 417-273-4967. Now listen to this. There's a potential, there is a potential toxic effect that comes from this. Cocaine leaves you with a hangover. Alcohol leaves you with a hangover. Side effects. The next problem is that I believe that Ritalin can reasonably be described as potentially toxic. Toxic. It's a poison. Kids, cocaine is a poison. Heroin is poison. Vioxx is poison. But they pull it from the market when it kills too many people. Now, Ritalin evidently doesn't kill too many. It kills some. You know, some of your children out there are dying from Ritalin. Did you know that? I got a report here. I'll share it with you as we progress along. But some children die from this Ritalin. Now, not very many, but some do. It's like giving your kid vaccines, you know. Not every kid that's given vaccine develops autism or sudden infant death syndrome, but some do. So they discovered over in Japan, for instance, but that by delaying the vaccination regimen, now they haven't abolished it in Japan, but instead of giving a two-month-old child vaccines, they don't give them vaccines till they're 2 years old. And they found that the sudden infant death syndrome dropped by 50% in Japan by delaying vaccination from 2 months to 2 years. All right. Now, the Japanese, I'm sure, very, very intelligent people over there. I think if they would try this one out, instead of giving vaccines to your children when they're 2 years old, don't give them any vaccines at all. Zero, zilch. None. And you'll have some of those children die, some of them will die, from diseases. But I think you'll find that the sudden infant death syndrome will disappear and the autism will disappear with the vaccinations. Autism, I don't know of a single case. If any of you people out there know of a single case of autism or sudden infant death syndrome, in an unvaccinated child, would you please report that to me? Would you send me an email or call me on the phone and say, yes, yes, Mr. Gordon, I know of a case. Little Johnny died of SIDS and he never, ever had a vaccination. Would you do that for me? And I think what you're going to find out, boys and girls, as you look around, every child who dies from SIDS or dies, or doesn't die, but has autism, has been vaccinated. And back in 1909, there was a doctor, I forgot his name now, I got a book up here, 1909, he said he'd never seen a case of cancer in an unvaccinated person. Unvaccinated. Now, vaccinations got hot and heavy starting about 1850. They got after smallpox, you know, about 1850, with universal vaccinations. And it didn't work then, doesn't work now, never has, never will, because it's a backward philosophy. But then, leaving that issue aside, vaccination, just leaving it aside, we find that these drugs are toxic. And yeah, it's true. Let's assume that we can eliminate every child from ever getting measles, mumps, and rubella. But we exchange measles, mumps, and rubella, which aren't fatal, for autism, which isn't exactly fatal, but it's, my God, what a penalty to pay. What a penalty to pay. What a wasted life. And sudden infant death syndrome, which does kill about 5,000 babies a year here in the United States. You know, again, it's not the end of the world. 5,000 kids a year die from SIDS, but again, it's 5,000 unnecessary deaths in my view. So I didn't vaccinate any of my children. I had five. I didn't shoot up one of them, not one. And all five of them grew up disease-free with all their teeth and no cavities. Isn't that amazing? Of course, I didn't give them Coke to drink either. I was a real nasty parent. Didn't let them have all the fun things of life. Didn't let them go out and practice free sex and alternative lifestyle and all that crazy stuff. Potentially toxic. The next problem is that I believe that Ritalin can reasonably be described as potentially toxic. Ritalin has been described as very safe. I'm going to underline that. It's described as being very safe, unlike Vioxx. But for the record, here is a list of some of the possible side effects which have been associated with Ritalin. All right, now there's 35 side effects. I'm going to read these to you. 35 side effects that come from Ritalin. Boy, this stuff feels good. It's like a drunk, you know. And he's drinking a bottle of Old Crow. God, this stuff tastes good. You know, then the next morning, oh my God, my head, you know, he's puking his guts out. And have you ever done that? You ever drink a little extra? You know, I did that a couple of times. I used to be young and stupid. And so I wanted to be one of the guys, you know, and so I had this bottle of Old Crow and I was trying to kill it, trying to drink it. See, I probably had 10 drinks. 16-year-old punk, pimply-faced kid, you know, trying to drink 10 drinks. Not only was I under the table, I was on the table and under the table and over the table and through the table, and I was so sick, I was puking and God, next morning I felt really bad. And then I got to thinking about that, and I said, boy, I had a lot of fun last night for a couple hours. I had a lot of fun with the guys last night. Now today, I'm so sick, I can't work. I'm just fagged out, drugged out. And so after doing that a couple of times, you know, I was kind of brain dead. I think I did it 2 or 3 times. I woke up one day and I said, you know, this is kind of stupid. I think I'll quit doing this. And then I became what's known as the Pepsi kid down at the Blue Room. You know, I'd go into the bar and everybody else is ordering up. And I'd, give me a Pepsi. You know, I wouldn't be a bit surprised, but what the Old Crow was probably better for me than the Pepsi. But I'll tell you, I felt better after drinking the Pepsi than I did the Old Crow. 35 side effects. Listen to this. Nervousness comes from Ritalin. You can become nervous, suffer from insomnia, decreased appetite, headache, drowsiness, dizziness, dyskinesia, blurring of vision, convulsions, muscle cramps, tics, Tourette's syndrome, toxic psychosis, some with visual and tactile hallucinations, transient depressed mood, abdominal pain, nausea, vomiting, dry mouth, tachycardia, palpitations, arrhythmias, changes in blood pressure and heart rate, angina pectoris, rash, pruritus, I guess that is, urticaria, fever, arthralgia, alopecia, I guess it is alopecia. Oh God, here's one. Thrombocytopenia, purpura. I don't know what the hell that is, but it sure sounds bad. Exfoliative dermatitis, erythema, erythema multiforme, that's one disease, leukopenia, anemia, and minor retardation of growth during prolonged therapy in children. Yeah, this retardation of growth during prolonged therapy, put your kid on this Ritalin, you know, when he's about 6 or 8, and it stunts his growth. Instead of your kid being 6'2", he'd be about 5'6". I would say stunted growth is probably a heavy penalty to be laying on your kid. But then, of course, as bad as this kid behaves, maybe you're just getting even with him. But I think that if you beat that kid a little bit, you know, slap him up alongside the head, that's what we used to say, you know, when I was a kid. That kid needs to be slapped up alongside the head. When a kid was misbehaving, that kid needs to be slapped up alongside the head. Or they need to slap a little sense into him. Now, I know for you Americans that that's, you know, just beyond the pale. It's beyond your comprehension that somebody would lay a hand on a child. Well, that's the way God is, you know. He lays hands. And then what happens is when the whole nation gets to be so out of control, like Sodom and Gomorrah gets to be out of control, Then he just nukes the whole damn thing, kills them all, brings them up in the second resurrection. Doctors who prescribe this Ritalin and who have the time and the inclination to read the warnings issued with the drug, and by the way, the pharmaceutical companies, they put the warning, this warning is on the label. These doctors would discover that Ritalin should not be given to patients who are suffering from marked anxiety, agitation, or tension, since it may aggravate these symptoms. Ritalin is contraindicated in patients with tics. It's prohibited in patients with tics. Tics and siblings or family history of diagnosis of Tourette's syndrome. It's also prohibited in patients with severe angina, pectoris, cardiac arrhythmias, glaucoma, thyrotoxicosis, or known sensitivity to methylphenidate. And it should be used cautiously in patients with hypertension. That's blood pressure should be monitored at appropriate intervals. Ritalin should not be used in children under 6 years of age, should not be used as a treatment for severe depression of either exogenous or endogenous origin, and may exacerbate symptoms of behavioral disturbance and thought disorder if given to psychotic children. And get this, your kid is in school and he's cutting up, see? And so the teacher is a little bit perturbed because your kid's cutting up, because she's such a bore that your kid can't stand school. So he's livening up the class a little bit. And so the teacher calls the social worker. The social worker observes your kid cutting up in class and says, oh my God, this kid's got to be brought under control. Heaven forbid that we'd grab him by the ear and march him down to the principal's office or slap him up alongside the head or whip his ass and make him behave. No, we can't do that. What we need to do is drug this kid out. Let's drug him up. So he sits here in his chair like a zombie, spaced out. Hey, that's really good stuff. Turn him into a druggie. The company selling it claims that although available clinical evidence indicates that treatment with Ritalin during childhood does not increase the likelihood of addiction, chronic abuse of Ritalin can lead to marked tolerance of psychic dependence with varying degrees of abnormal behavior. Now, did you catch that? Let me cover that one again. The company selling Ritalin claims that although available clinical evidence indicates that treatment with Ritalin during childhood does not increase the likelihood of addiction. Excuse me. Is cocaine addictive or not? All of the evidence that I've read or seen, and I've never tried Ritalin, Ritalin or cocaine. I don't know. Honest to God, I don't know. And I'm just a reporter, and I really can't, you know, I've never jumped off the Empire State Building, so I cannot really report from first-hand knowledge whether people fall down or right or left or up when they step off of the 102nd story. I don't know from first-hand knowledge. But all of the reports that I have read about people who have, in the past, stepped off of the Empire State Building, all of them fell down. Nobody ever fell right, left, or up. So every report that I've read tells me that cocaine is addictive. Now, if there's something that I've missed, would you send me an email or call me on the phone and say, Gordon, you're out to lunch. I'm a cocaine user. I've been using cocaine every day for 30 years, and I am not hooked on cocaine. Or maybe you could call me and you could say, well, look, I use cocaine for about 5 years every day. And then one day I just woke up and said, I don't think I'll use this stuff anymore. So I just quit cold turkey and I've never used it since. And that was 30 years ago. I mean, you know, I used to be a smoker and I smoked White Owl cigars and Camel Studs. And I can tell you that nicotine is addictive. And when you quit smoking, you're going to go through withdrawal symptoms. You are going to feel real bad for about 3 days. That was 3 days. I figured if I could do it for 3 days, I could do it forever. It's a psychological addiction. That was my observation from first-hand experience. I smoked every day a pack of Camel Studs every day for 9 years. And then I augmented that with White Owl cigars and a couple of other brands of cigars that I didn't like quite as well. So I can tell you from firsthand experience that nicotine is addictive and smoking is psychologically addictive, and it was hell when I quit, but I quit, and that was back about 1963, and I haven't smoked a cigarette since. So I think that I could tell you about nicotine. I can also tell you about whiskey, you know, and I can tell you about booze. I've experimented with that and I had a little experience. Now I don't know much about cocaine. So maybe some of you cocaine guys out there can straighten me out, but from what I understand, this stuff is addictive. Now here's the company that makes it, and they say, oh no, it's not addictive. Isn't that what the tobacco companies were telling us for years and years, that nicotine isn't addictive? And didn't we find out that the tobacco companies knew that that was a lie and that they lied to us for many years? And isn't that why they agreed to that $265 billion settlement? Huh? Wasn't that the story behind that? So tobacco companies lie a lot. And I wouldn't be a bit surprised, but what these drug companies might stretch the truth just a tad. Just a tad, don't you? Ritalin should also be used with caution in patients with epilepsy, since there may be an increase in seizure frequency. And height and weight should be carefully monitored in children, as prolonged therapy may result in growth retardation. Growth retardation. My dad suffered from that. All of the Gordons are 6 foot plus. Except my dad, he was 5'6", suffered from the little man syndrome. My daddy did. And he started smoking when he was about 10 years old. Yes, sir, my daddy started smoking. And I heard that. My granny said, smoking will stunt your growth. So I experimented with cigarettes. I didn't get into it too hot and heavy at age 12. But I did try them. But I had heard that smoking stunts your growth, so I waited until I was about 16. I was already 6 foot, you know, by the time I got into smoking kind of hot and heavy. And I wouldn't be a bit surprised by what smoking stunts your growth. And by observation here, the drug companies tell you that this Ritalin will stunt your growth. And you got to monitor that because it causes growth retardation. A child might lose several inches, not 1 inch, not a half an inch. A child might lose several inches in possible height, though if treatment is stopped, there is generally a growth spurt. So there's the bright spot. If you got a kid on Ritalin and you take him off, he'll probably start growing again. Honest to God, kids, do you think that turning your kid into a cokehead and stunting his growth is worth the price that we're paying for this? Well, let me give you a friendly reminder as we leave the air today that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're also heard 7 days a week around the world over the Internet in 75 countries. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Remember, the Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement, and the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults, not children now, but adults, on compact disc. And if you'd like more information, go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, our time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.